Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 780. It's the 19th of May, 2017. On the podcast today, I have Harris Chowdhury, founder and executive chairman of Innovaderma, that's IDP ticker. And Harris talks about the business, its lead product, Skinny Tan, and other products they have in the pipeline. Also on the podcast, Russ Mould, investment director at stockbroker AJ Bell, talks about the following stocks: Craneware, that's CRW, Tharisa, THS, and Burford Capital, BUH. Also, Simon French, chief economist at Panmure Gordon, talks about Trump's NAFTA talks, the Conservative Manifesto, and UK retail sales. Plus, I also have Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talking about Defence Group, that's DFX, and advanced oncotherapy. And as normal, I always have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Harris Chowdhury, founder and executive chairman of Innovaderma. That's IDP ticker. Harris, thanks for joining me.
Very welcome. Good to be here, Justin.
Yeah, well, listen, we've had quite a few requests. We've managed to get you on because there's a lot of excitement about your company and about the products you have. For people not aware, though, Harris, of what you do, can you give us a brief summary of the company, and then we'll go into a bit more detail after that?
Sure. Innovaderma is a relatively youngish company, started 3.5 years ago, that I founded. And specifically, it creates and distributes clinically proven products in healthcare, life sciences, in the fast-moving consumer goods, cosmetic and beauty. So essentially, it's a company which has come about mainly off the back of two acquisitions we did for two brands which were not performing at all. We acquired them, we've scaled them, and we have continued on our journey to significantly scale our revenues, our earnings, in multiple parts of the world globally.
Okay, excellent. Well, let's dig a bit deeper into what you're selling and what you're doing. And I've seen, essentially, on social media, a lot of tweets about Skinny Tan. Now, is that your lead product? If it is, can you explain what it is and how well it's doing, please, Harris?
Yeah, look, Skinny Tan is an absolutely fantastic acquisition. We acquired the company back in May 2015. The company had a really good brand. It had really good the ability for it to deliver what actually said it deliver, but most importantly, obviously, it had a lot of noise with the founders appearing on Dragon's Den and all five dragons wanting to invest. So it got really good boost when that happened before we acquired, but the sales were, the previous founders were not able to execute the strategy in continuing on with building the sales. So when we actually acquired the company, it was generating probably around 40,000 pounds a month and was losing that much money. So we had seen the brand, we knew it would work, we thought it would work really well in the digital and social media world. So we acquired in May 2015, and within 6 months, we increased the turnover 1,000%. We took it from 200 retail doors to over 2,500 retail doors across 9 different countries in 3 continents. So we increased the product range for Skinny Tan from 14 product lines to now we're sitting at over 35. So it has become the best selling brand in its category in Superdrug. And for a brand that only went into Superdrug less than 18 months ago, we got in January of last year, January 2016. We have got 34 facings, the fastest growing brand for Superdrug in its category. It is also the fastest selling brand on Superdrug online in its category. And there's a very large difference between us and the number two brand. And as we actually get into the peak season, now getting into the summer, we expect that to continue.
Wow, so that couldn't have gone any better than you expected or planned or hoped. So what, let me ask you, what does actually Skinny Tan do? Why is it better than its competitors?
Look, Skinny Tan is one of the first tanner, self-tanner, which provides, it uses all natural ingredients. It doesn't smell horrible. It is easy to apply. It gives a very natural looking tan. And it also contains guarana, which has the ability to dissipate cellulite. So you might have a bit more of a firmer, toner skin. But look, there are a lot of products could do great things. But with us, what we realized was that we could scale, we could highlight the unique properties of Skinny Tan in obviously the fastest growing social media platforms, being the Facebook and Instagram. And through our D2C, which is direct to consumer digital channel, we were able to make very significant inroads very early, as soon as we had acquired. So much so that we are sitting now, over the last 2 years, we have increased our following from zero to over 300,000 followers across social media platforms, across the countries that we distribute in. And we have increased, we've got an active client base now for around 200,000 clients that we basically sell direct to. So going back to May 15, there's not a single direct client. And now we're doing around between 18 to 20,000 deliveries to unique clients. So we've come a long way, but I think we are still at the very start of what we believe is going to be an exciting journey. Because based on the research that we have done, 83% of the clients, of our clients, Skinny Tan clients, were not using the tanner, were not the clients who were using a tanning product before. So we are effectively creating a brand new market and bringing new customers towards the self-tanning. And now that we have started getting into the skincare areas, we believe it will continue to grow and get a lot more growth in USA, which we have started scaling as of last quarter.
Yeah, wow. So you've got Skinny Tan's done, you know, excellently well for you. And so, like you say, you've got other products there. So in the next few months, what other products or product will you be releasing then, Harris?
Look, we actually did a really good acquisition. I mean, almost on the same terms that we acquired Skinny Tan. We paid $50,000 for Skinny Tan, around 30,000 sterlings. And back then, obviously, it had good brand, very good product. Really good brand, very passionate founder. And we wanted to bring the passionate founder on board, heading the brand, and then being able to communicate and articulate the same message through the social media to the followers. And that has delivered massive dividends. Now, we acquired two brands developed by the same person out of Melbourne, Kate Fissenden, who created Charles & Lee men's skincare range, and she also created one of the fastest growing spaces globally, which is Color Cosmetics, called Stevie K Cosmetics. Now, both brands, very unique, great urban appeal, excellent value proposition, and a great story behind. So what we are doing right now is we are launching those brands gradually in direct-to-consumer platform, which is a digital platform, and we are finding that they would be scaling really quickly. Again, we have got the founder. We paid $50,000, around 30,000 sterling for those brands. We have brought the founder on board. We have enabled the founder to create the campaigns, to articulate, to share their message on how they created the brand, what the brand does, why it is so different, and connect with the generation which actively uses our social media and highlight those benefits and monetize them into sales. Mm-hmm. With that comes a demand from retailers. I mean, most of the retailers have been approaching us rather than us approaching them, because we create such a buzz in the market through very active use of unique methods of propagating the message on the brand, largely driven by the passionate founder, which has allowed us to pick and choose the retail partners for us globally. So those brands, we believe, obviously would be generating significant interest and dividends. We are also expecting our clinically proven Headmaster wearable helmet, which has clinically been proven to reduce hair loss and regrow hair in over 90% of people, to be launched after it clears FDA this year. We believe that would be very scalable in terms of D2C. We've already also acquired Prolong. We made an RNS announcement out last month, earlier this month. So Prolong is the world's only FDA-cleared device for premature ejaculation that affects over 500 million men globally, and without any side effects as well. So we believe that by us being able to acquire or develop products with a very, very unique ability, be it its ability to deliver what it actually says in terms of its heritage, together with the founders of those brands, would allow us to scale all of those significantly throughout 2017 and 2018.
Excellent. Well, listen, you've got a successful product there in Skinny 10. You've got a pipeline of products coming on board, and also you've got a digital platform in which you can sell through as well. So it's looking good. So if anyone's listening to this now, Harrison, they like the sound of what you're doing, but they're not following you on Vox Markets, then could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
I can give you 30, but in terms of three, well, the first one is that we are very unique in what we do. We have been able to, in three short years, we have been able to demonstrate that we can monetize. We have got a very good eye for picking up brands or developing brands which can create scalability. We have demonstrated that. And in terms of the massive growth that we are having, and we expect to be on the same growth trajectory. So it's a very exciting story. The second one is we are doing that obviously very, whilst not burning a lot of cash. So we are growing, and our growth is through, funded through our cash flow. Obviously, lastly, that we have been making a lot of excitement inroads into other areas outside of tanning. It's in the life sciences. We are a digital direct-to-consumer platform, and this is probably the most exciting reason, is very unique to us, and which we actually believe, in my opinion, no one else has been able to scale it the way we have been able to. With a community following of 300,000, with active client base of 200,000, just off the back of one brand, we believe we are going to be delivering great results throughout this year and next year.
Excellent stuff. Harris, it's good to chat to you. And hopefully, like you say, it's going to be a busy year for you. So hopefully we'll chat again very soon. Thank you very much.
Look forward to it. Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell. All right, Russ.
Hello, Justin, mate. How are you?
Not too bad. How's the week been at your end of the world there?
Fast and furious. But it's Friday now. But yeah, it's been good. I mean, obviously, there's been lots going on macro-wise, with people worrying about the Trump slump and whether that will negate the Trump bump, I suppose. That's been dominating a lot of people's attentions. But equally, there's been an awful lot going on bottom-up as well. There's been stacks of company news this week. And obviously, politically over here, we've had all the manifestos coming out, so there's been no shortage of things for us to chew over.
Yeah. It's fascinating, the Trump thing, isn't it? Because he's the man that kept flagging up fake news. And you find sometimes someone who shouts that the loudest, it's often the perpetrator, and I just think at the moment, what's going on here? I want to know the real truth behind what is actually going on. You know,
my old mother, my young mother, I should say, she's still with us. I'm always used to say that the emptiest vessels make the most noise. That's not so. I probably, but you've got to be a little bit careful what you say. I mean, in the end, people are clearly using the impeachment word. I mean, I think there's a long way to go before we get to any level whereby there's burden of proof there, but I'm sure it won't stop people digging. But clearly the market's current concern is, will this delay the implementation of the Trump reform program of tax cuts, infrastructure spending and deregulation that's had markets all hot and bothered and excited for the last 6 months? And clearly that is becoming the prevailing fear at the moment. It's a quote I used in an interview the other day. The markets have risen the wall of worry, wondering about who the hell Trump was, what was he going to do, what was this outsider going to do, and now they're sort of sliding down the slope of hope because he's built up expectations, and now he's got to deliver. And and as with often the case with these things, it just takes a lot longer than people think. So I'm not too worried, but clearly from a market that is sitting at record highs, has been spookily calm. So little volatility for the last 6 or 9 months. It is the sort of left field event that would make people a little bit nervous if the president's program does start to run into the sand. I mean, I have looked at what happened when Richard M. Nixon resigned in 1974. and when Bill Clinton was impeached and actually then acquitted in 98-99. Yeah. Initially, you think, oh, this is all pretty easy, because the market, the US market, just went down in a straight line during the Nixon impeachment process before he quit, and didn't bottom out until 2 or 3 months afterwards. And then the market just went up in a straight line before and after Bill Clinton's acquittal. So you think, oh, well, you know, if it all blows over, no big deal. If Trump does, for whatever reason, end up being ejected from office and President Pence takes over, then we can maybe expect some rough stuff. But at the same time, you know, the economic environment was so different. Under Nixon, you'd had the oil price shock. Inflation was running at double digits and the US economy had fallen into recession, and the Fed was jacking up interest rates. Under Clinton, US GDP growth trended at 4% to 4.5% in his second term. Hard to believe as that is right now. Inflation was low and the Fed was actually accommodative, in that when you got the Asian debt crisis, the Greenspan cut interest rates and actually stepped in to bail out a hedge fund, sort of coining the phrase the Greenspan put. So you couldn't have had two more different backdrops. So again, we've talked about it before, politics creates lots of noise, but long run, it's profits and cash flows that matter. So yeah, if the I word, the impeachment word, gets used a lot more, you would expect markets to become wobbly. But is a change of president really going to stop people smoking, betting, drinking, gambling, eating? Is it going to stop companies buying capital goods? Is it going to stop hospitals buying pills?
Yeah, nah. It's just the initial shock, isn't it?
Of, yeah, exactly.
Which I suppose is a trader's dream, really, the initial shock that can trade that. And
exactly.
Then, and then it's back to sort of the norm.
Great for traders, investors. Yeah, you know, again, try not to overtrade and incur all those unnecessary costs if you don't have to.
But before we get the three stocks, part of me is always, sometimes I often wake up thinking, did Donald Trump really become president? And part of me thinks he'll only last 4 years, if that.
I've always thought he may
not even make 4 years, controversially is, and we may see that. We never know. Okay, let's look at the stocks. So first and foremost, what's up?
Okay, so we're going to do three this week. One that I've not looked at with you before, and then two that we have. The first is Craneware, and then we're going to do some updates on Theresa and Burford Capital.
Okay, go for it. Craneware, what's that all about?
Okay, Craneware, it's AIM-quoted, it's domiciled in Edinburgh, and it is a provider of software and financial analysis tools to hospitals, which is, you know, topical on both sides of the Atlantic right now, given, you know, funding questions over the NHS and also the Trump administration's plans to repeal and replace Obamacare or the Affordable Health Care Act. I mean, what's interesting is that although Craneware is based in Edinburgh, the bulk of its business is actually done in the USA. And I know you're a chartist kind of guy. It's one of the most, I mean, I'm not, but I've had a look at the chart and it is one of the most bizarre things I have ever seen.
It is really odd. I was looking at it really flat.
Unless the patient's dead, it doesn't look like a patient's heartbeat anywhere.
No, exactly. It's almost, I think that's because there's a lack of volume, you know, there's a volume there. You find charts look better with a bit of volume. And it just seemed flat from volume. So it's one of those things that could spike up and spike down on a bit of volume.
Well, I think the reason why the shares have trodden water recently is the fact that it is very, very exposed to the US healthcare market, where there is still uncertainty over how the Trump reform plan will play out. But, you know, if you look at what Craneware software does, it prices, changes, codes, charges, services and supplies that hospitals supply to patients. So it's right in the heart of where Trump is looking to achieve, you know, efficiency gains and savings and come up with a system that he thinks is superior and more affordable than Obamacare. In that respect, it's still in the right territory. Clearly, the market is just waiting for some visibility on what's happening. Now, the US system is fiendishly complicated as it is. If you're not wealthy, you generally get subsidized healthcare. If you are wealthy, you either pay for it yourself or generally your employer does it for you. If you're elderly, then you've got Medicare. So there's actually a lot of coverage out there anyway. The big debate over Obamacare is, as ever with all policies, the squeezed middle. The smaller companies, the entrepreneur, the person who works on their own, it's, you know, they're the people who are in some ways at most risk here of not having cover or finding themselves with very expensive cover. I mean, did you know that if you were to be an uncovered person, were to be involved in a car accident in the US, God forbid, and you were taken to hospital, the hospital is legally obliged to stabilize your condition, whether you've got insurance or not. There is still some mechanism there, but clearly the big fear over Obamacare is that squeeze middle, when Obamacare is repealed and or replaced, is that insurance companies just jack up the rates so much to make it actually worth their while. So I think that's what people are frightened of. But if you look at what Craneware provides, It provides services to actually help hospitals deal with this very complex regulatory and financial situation. 85% of revenues are recurring. It's got a 25% operating margin. It's got a net cash balance sheet. So in that respect, it's one of the, you know, it's a good company. I guess now we're just waiting to see what the US situation pans out as, but long run, it still feels like the sort of industry in which you want to be involved, and whereby anybody that helps provide efficiencies as this company does is probably pretty set fair.
Yeah, marvellous. Okay, that's a CRW there. All right. So let's go to the next, which is it Therissa?
It is Therissa. It's main market quoted, 275 million market cap. I mean, we first talked about this in April, and it's gone from 140p to about 107 since then. So we definitely need to look at it again. But this is obviously, as we know, what commodity stocks do. They can go up like the rocket. They can come down like the stick. The stock did incredibly well last year on the back of soaring chrome prices. It's an open pit miner in South Africa with a specialist in chrome and platinum group metals. And this year, the chrome price has come down from around $390 a tonne to somewhere in the mid to late 100s, and that's what's dragging the share price down. So the company is in profit, or it got to profit last year. It is talking about a maiden dividend for the financial year that ends in September. But if the chrome price takes a further hammering, then obviously that's going to come under threat, and that's why the shares have been weak. Even if the company's open pit approach and the fact that it doesn't subcontract out and is actually looking for internal efficiencies means it's a pretty low-cost producer. Now, why has chrome been going down? It all comes back to the big fight country with, you know, five letters in its name. It's all down to China. We've got this stop-start economic situation, big fiscal and monetary stimulus last year to keep the show on the road. That is now beginning to wind off. They don't want it to overheat. Equally, as we've discussed before, 19th Party Congress this autumn. They don't want the economy to drop in a hole either, because that obviously is a threat to the economic credibility of the ruling Communist Party. So you've got this stop-start, and actually the People's Bank of China has now stopped withdrawing liquidity from the market and is actually started pumping it back in again. So it wouldn't be a shock if commodity prices were to pop in the short term. That would help. Peel Hunt are the main broker on the stock. They're actually running with chrome price assumptions of sort of $170 to $180 for this year. So that where we are right now isn't a disaster in terms of the forecast. Further falls would be inconvenient. So again, this is one not for the risk wary. It's not for income hunters. It is for people who like commodities, who like momentum, prepared to take the risk. But if China, you know, slips back on, gets back on track and starts to pump the economic or prime the economic pump again, it's one to be in. If China, for whatever reason, does hit the wall, then it's definitely not one that you want to be anywhere near. But I can't believe that this year the Chinese won't make sure that things stay on track just because you've got that big power brokers conference in the autumn.
Yeah, well, I'd say one thing that may help at that, and commodities, I don't know if you've seen this, it was in The Guardian, and one of the blog writers on Vox flagged it up. China's building a new city called Ziogan. It's located 110 kilometres south of Beijing. It's going to be three times the size of New York. That's put it in this perspective. And so they're thinking, Wood Mackenzie released a base case study, potential commodity consumption required. They estimate 20 million tonnes of steel, 400 kilotons of aluminium and 250 kilotons of copper demand during the first 10 years. So potentially another commodity boom on the way. And they're just, and it's amazing just build a new city three times the size of New York. That's phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's the way it's worked for a long time. That's why it's been a huge driver of the global of global commodities demand. And if you buy into that story, and it will be in chrome, would naturally be a beneficiary of that. I mean, again, looking at the chart, I think you can tell me if I'm wrong, but it looks to me like support level's about 100p, and the one below that's about 80. Is that right?
Yeah. And also, do you know what? So yes, because you've got previous resistance there. And also, you know, it's so simplistic, but charts sometimes just favour round figures, and that pound figure always suggests it always could dip a little bit below that. But you think if you're looking to get in, then it's a good initial tranche maybe at the pound level or just below, and see where it goes. But yes, definitely good support level there on 80. As you say, but okay. And the third one is Burford Capital, or Burford Capital.
Yeah, go B-U-R-M. I mean, it's AIM quoted. It's not right to call it a small cap because it's got a 1.8 billion market valuation. Yeah, aren't many on AIM, or actually bigger, probably ASOS and Boohoo, and that's about it. But we've talked about it before. Since mid-March, the shares have gone from about £7.30 to £8.25. So they're still going up very strongly. Remember, it's a litigation finance specialist. It funds lawsuits for compensations claims. So it's a bit of a lumpy business. There isn't great transparency or visibility because they don't disclose too much about what they're doing until after the fact. But the March numbers were very strong. net profit up 75%, litigation investments up 60%, and commitment to future litigation up 83%, sort of building the future growth foundations. And I think what just what's caught my eye is we talked before about the company has issued two bonds on the London Stock Exchange's order book for retail bonds. It's just done a third, and it's closed early. So it's actually due to close next week, which is why I wanted to talk about it.
Yeah.
It closed yesterday. We get the sizing details today, but it's a 2026 bond with a 5% coupon, and it's clearly sold like hotcakes. As with most all paper, it's unrated bonds. The coupons are semi-annual, trades in 100 quid denomination, so there's nothing to be frightened of there. Mm-hmm. So let's see what the size is today. Issued at 100p a bond. But again, there are two existing bonds out there. There's a 6.5% coupon 2022, and a 6.125% coupon 2024 maturity. They've now got yields to maturity of about 4.5%. This paper's come out at 5%. So you might look at the company and think, I like this, but actually I've maybe missed the shares. I'm on a 15 times forward earnings multiple, maybe not. But if you want if you're an income hunter or looking for something a bit of a safer way in, then the bond is something to consider. It might not be wildly liquid, but again, bonds are a genuine buy and hold investments, you know, very much like, probably even more than shares are. And you might just think, actually, a 5% coupon on a 10-year bond, yeah, it might just fit that particular person's investment strategy profile. But it's interesting to see that it's been, you know, very, very happily snapped up by people in terms of the primary offering.
Yeah, do you know what? I remember reading about these in Investors Chronicle about, must have been over a year ago, and thinking, that sounded interesting, litigation, you know, and I thought that sounded interesting because it's obviously a big market for that. And they must have been, when I looked, they must have been about, you know, 2 odd quid when I looked, they must have been, because over a year ago.
Yeah.
And now they're 864. I remember thinking, I put a mental bookmark in my head, thinking, I'll look into those. I didn't, though. Didn't take any further. And one of the ones has gone away, you know?
It's easy. And then you've got to do your research before you look at before you get involved. So if you haven't done your research, you've done the right thing, even if you think, oh, I've missed out. But you'd obviously feel a proper mug if you did get involved, hadn't done your research, and something had gone wrong. So always better to be safer than sorry.
Marvellous. Russ, thanks very much. Have a nice
Not
weekend.
Not at all. Enjoy your weekend. Speak to you next week.
Speak next week, fella. Cheers.
Take care. Bye-bye now.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chief Economist at Panmure Gordon, Simon French. All right, Si?
Morning, Justin. Very well. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. Now, what are you looking at on the macro level? What's hitting your radar there, Si, your keen radar?
Yeah, well, this morning it's all about the White House trying to divert attention on the inquiry into Michael Flynn, and it's all about NAFTA. So this is the North American Free Trade Area and the trade deal with the US's biggest trading partners, Canada and Mexico. And of course, Donald Trump, in that classic political approach of trying to divert away from some bad news, is appealing to his base and saying he's going to renegotiate NAFTA, which of course is, he has accused the Mexicans and the Canadians of stealing American jobs by having preferential access to the US market.
Yeah, so he's going to renegotiate. Do you know, it's amazing how everything he said he's going to do has either not been done or sort of been watered down. So it's like this brash, you know, Trump we saw before the elections has not really come to fruition, has it really? Which I'm glad, really, you know?
Well, you're right. I mean, he talked during the election campaign about a 45% tariff on Chinese imports, a 25% tariff on Mexican imports. And there is the suspicion that he's gone a little bit soft. I must say, as a free market economist, I'm quite pleased he's gone soft. And not soft universally. He has slapped tariffs on Canadian lumber, but these are small fry compared to some of the protectionist rhetoric that we worried about. But it seems it's back in vogue. It seems that the success story that NAFTA has been since 1994, because trade between the US and Mexico has more than tripled over the period, it appears that Mr. Trump thinks this is a one-way advantage and wants to rebalance it. We will see whether his famed negotiating skills can be brought to bear on this trade deal.
Yeah, okay. By the way, did you watch last night. I saw clips of it. I didn't watch the leaders' debate. There weren't many leaders there. Well, there were leaders, but not the leaders people wanted. Did you watch any of that last night, Simon?
I couldn't do it, Justin. I really couldn't. Yeah, reason that, you know, if the two grown-ups in the room, or relative grown-ups, at least by the share of the vote they're expected to get, are not there, then what are you looking for? I mean, it wasn't that interesting to me.
Exactly. It's pretty much pointless there, I thought. But I suppose, from ITV's point of view, it creates a bit of headlines, you know, and so it's good for them at PR, I suppose, so they went ahead with it. It'd be funny if they just pulled out as well. ITV said, no, we're not going to bother either. But talking about, you know, Theresa May, she brought the manifesto out yesterday. What's the key points there that you picked up on, Si?
Well, I thought we'd take a bit of an economic look at it rather than the political headlines that dominated yesterday. And look, I think there were three main areas in terms of what the impact on the UK economy will be. The first one was this continuation of the tens of thousands target for net migration. And there's a bit of furore this morning as to over what time scale that will be delivered. And also for British businesses, the fact that there'll be a doubling in the amount they'll have to pay to bring in a migrant worker. It's going up from 1,000 to 2,000. Now, whatever you think of the social impacts on communities, actually net migration has been a boon in terms of tax receipts for the UK economy and in terms of growth. So if there's a more hard line post-Brexit on migration, it's going to sort of pare back the growth estimate in the UK from my estimates from about 2.1% trend growth to about 1.7% if they hit that tens of thousands target. But you, like me, like a lot of other people, are fairly cynical as to whether they'll actually ever do it.
Yeah, and also I find it really odd as well. I don't know if it's still in the manifesto, but a while back they had this, you know, hard figure on immigration. I thought that's impossible, surely, because like anything, you know, the economies change, and sometimes you'll need more immigration labour, other times you don't. So you can't just put a hard figure on it. It should be very flexible to work with the economy. We need immigration, you know, and that's I think that's the thing that a lot of people sort of don't accept. I think we don't. We absolutely do need it, and you know, it's got to be flexible. I think, hasn't it, really?
Well, that's right. If you see signs that the economy needs more or less, you want to have the ability to change the criteria. What the problem of things like a numeric target, some of the things that have got the government in trouble, like the triple lock of the state pension, when you try and approach economics, I've spoken about this on the podcast previously, when you try and approach economics like a natural science, a kind of set of numbers that can be controlled, then you do invariably get yourself into trouble. I mean, you can go back to Gordon Brown's borrowing rules, George Osborne's borrowing rules. When you try and put rules on what is an unruly system, then you invariably get yourself into trouble. The other part of the manifesto that I thought was interesting was the changes to social care and what this will do regarding housing assets. Because, of course, historically, you've only had to pay for care if you went to a care facility, a care home, against the value of your property. But now they're saying, or the Conservatives are saying, that you will pay even if you get care in your own home. And you can push down the value of assets all the way down to £100,000. Sounds like a lot of money, but for some people with housing assets worth far, far more than that, they may suddenly find that that is equivalent to a fair tax on their what they assumed was a protected asset in terms of their house.
Yeah, and in fact, just going back to this, even trying to apply a scientific sort of mould or prediction, it doesn't really work. And in fact, what happened with that, you're probably over this, the retail sales figures were like, you know, a huge jump, wasn't it, above expectations? What happened there?
Well, this was the timing of Easter. This is always the problem at the start of Q2, looking at monthly data, because, you know, thanks to our slightly curious Gregorian calendar system, Easter falls at a different time every year. Sometimes it falls in March, sometimes it falls in April, and it does play havoc with the year-on-year adjustment. So it appears like the time of Easter played well in these the retail sales numbers. But as I always say to your listeners, look at the trend. The single month data is unhelpful. Retail sales have been slowing, and they've been slowing because of real wage compression. Of course, we had the earnings data earlier in the week, and that showed that real wages, that's the amount that wages are growing in excess of inflation, is now in negative territory, now falling. Mm. And of course, consumers as a result feel they're a little less well off and are pulling back their spending. Not a collapse. This is not something that, you know, is pushing the UK towards, you know, recession territory, but it's the kind of thing that, given a cautious outlook during, you know, Article 50 process, the weakness in the pound, it's just a case of consumers taking their foot off the pedal.
Yeah. Okay, marvellous stuff. Well, do you know what? Whenever we chat and you study, do you find, Si, when you look at figures a lot like this, do you start to worry just generally about the economy? Or is it now you've seen so many sort of bearish outlooks in your career that you think, well, things come to pass now and again?
Yeah, Justin. So I have a fairly simple view on terms of trying to read the UK economy, indeed the global economy. I look at two things. I look at the credit market and I look at the labour market. So the credit market, this is the cost of credit for households, for businesses. You know, these are mortgage rates, credit card rates. There is, and those were the things that really started to pick up in the run-up to the financial crisis. And at the moment, there is no sign of credit being withdrawn or indeed the cost of credit going up. So that's the first thing that means that, despite the noise in the data, I'm not too concerned. The other thing is forward hiring intentions in the labour market and seeing whether employers are nervous about, you know, the introduction of the National Living Wage, the apprenticeship levy, auto enrolment, and are starting to reduce the hiring they're planning to do over the next 6 to 12 months. And again, there are very few signs that they are. If anything, they're a little bit worried they may, because those migration controls, not have access to labour going forward and are trying to hoard it. So we got some very good jobs data, as I say, earlier in the week. So as a result, if those two markets are quite healthy, a lot of the other stuff in certain segments is tantamount to noise in the big picture.
Yeah, okay, exactly. It's hard to cut out the noise sometimes. But So, thanks for that. Have a nice weekend and speak next week.
Pleasure, Justin. You too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of Brandon Communications, Alan Green. You're all right, Al?
Hello, Justin. Very good. How are you?
I'm all right. Yeah, it's not too bad. And what are we looking at this week, Al?
Okay, just wanted to update on a couple of things. Well, firstly, it was a great podcast with Kieran Mazaria this morning of CEO of Cadence Minerals. Had a good listen to that, and it's a very, very strong investment case there. I think if you wanted to invest into the new emerging rare earth metals, it's kind of a very well managed investment trust, and there's a very broad spread of risk into projects that are well developed and projects that are under development. So yeah, I really like the sound of that. But what I wanted to talk about today, two things. First of all, in mind of the ransomware attack we all had last weekend, obviously cybersecurity is at the fore at the moment, and there are a number of companies in this region, all of whom have benefited over the past week. But there's one in particular I wanted to look at. It's a company we have spoken about before called Defense. It's Defense, but with an X on the end rather than CE. The epic code is DFX.
Yep, Defense, yep.
Yep. Currently worth 19 million market cap, so it's a tiny little firm. It's growing. Been as high as £1.66, as low as 67.5p during the year. Now, we spoke about this earlier on the year, but this was highlighted by my colleague, Dr. David Paul of VectorVest, who then wrote about it again this week, and he was also interviewed by Jeremy Naylor on IGTV. This company put out its full year results on the 11th of April. Actually, I'll just go back and just recap on what Defense does. It specializes in cyberware and defense software for mobile devices. So it's got a complete cross section of products for that area. The company has it made an acquisition last year. It's just entered a long-term strategic partnership with an Italian company called BV Tech. But on the 11th of April, the company reported 58% year-on-year growth in revenues to 7 million euros, and also a 10% increase in average revenue per user. That's the ARPU metric. operating profits up, and the CEO was very bullish at the results announcement and said that the joint venture with BVTech is going to help them drive growth in 2017, enter into new markets and broaden the management team. Of course, the stock has had an uplift during the week on the back of the cyberware attack last weekend, but when we spoke about this in February, the VectorVest system had noted the uplift in earnings growth and cited a target of £1.36. Of course, it's actually gone past that now. We're currently trading at £1.64. With the uplift on the earnings and the general performance of the company, the VectorVest have again attributed an uplift to the target and have a rating for it around 196 pence. If we look at the chart as well, we can see the chart's growing strongly. It's hit an important horizontal resistance level and it's got a strong upward momentum. And clearly, this isn't going to be without bumps in the road going forward, but this company seems to be in a very good position. Its revenues and earnings are growing strongly. It's growing organically, and it's entering new markets this year. So it's really one to watch the future.
Marvellous, yes. I had the guys on from Defence, and I just think most cybersecurity companies now who are, you know, worth their salt will see a re-rate in their prices over the next few months, because you know, cyber attacks raise awareness completely against, you know, by individuals and corporations, and it realizes that they have to get on track with this. They, you know, they have to get the ball on up to speed with their cyber defense. So I think it'll help a lot of companies, you know. So, and it's always going to be here, you know, it's always going to be here. It's never going to go away. There's always going to be cyber attacks, you know, more and more as time goes on, I think. So,
we're increasingly reliant on computers and mobile devices. All of our data is stored there. So, of course, that's where the hackers can get it. And as soon as a new system comes out, someone's always trying to get around it. So, it is a moving feast.
Yeah, marvellous. Anything else happening at L?
Yeah. I wanted to look at advanced oncotherapy. AVO is the Epic code. Several reasons for this. Just to recap what the company does, it's developed, it acquired a company called ADAM, which is a spin-off from CERN in Switzerland, which are it's the Hadron Collider people based in Geneva. And ADAM, the company ADAM, has developed a proton beam therapy system to treat cancer. And I won't go into too much detail, but there's clearly the success of proton beam therapy for cancer patients has been very well documented over the years, and indeed on the BrandUK.net website there's a lot of information about these cases going back over the past couple of years. Advanced Oncotherapy has been developing the light machine using harnessing the ADAM technology. The machine is expected to enter the market sometime next year, and the company is also developing a treatment centre at Harley Street in central London. Now, there's been an issue in that over the past couple of years, milestones have been set and not been achieved. The new CEO, Nicholas Serendour, has come in and he laid out his 100-day plan a couple of months ago. I believe that with the structure the company has now, he's very much lowballed those delivery dates. So I think we can expect to see some significant progress through the year. Now, one of the key things with the company is, and it's been highlighted by a number of commentators in the press, and I won't go into details and talk about who they are, but the company entered a financing agreement to basically ensure that it was funded all the way through to production, to the sale of the machines, and to the completion of the Harley Street premises. It entered a financing deal arrangement with Bracknell Investment Group, where the company Bracknell provided financing for the next 24 months to a minimum of $13 million and a maximum of $26 million. Advanced Oncotherapy control the time of the payments. They can repay up to each they can repay the borrowing and up to 50% in cash. Bracknell also received warrants on issue. The company can't own more than 29.9% of AVO, and obviously there are fees and so on around the the arrangement. Bracknell, since Advanced Oncotherapy started to draw down on the money, they've drawn down $2.5 million to date. Bracknell have undertaken a number of conversion of the loan into shares, and that's taken place on a number of occasions. And Express has been concerned that with the normal shares at 25p, if the company share price closes at 100%. Or 110% or less over a 10-day period, then it triggers an extraordinary general meeting. Thankfully, that didn't happen, but clearly it's raised concerns over the company as a going concern. Now, I've looked at this and thought, well, yeah, that is a concern on the one hand, but on the other hand, the company is funded going forward regardless. Plus, we've had four directors, including the chairman Michael Sinclair, sticking their hand in their pocket and coming in with some fairly chunky share purchases. We've had Michael Sinclair purchase 200,000 shares at 30p. Dr. Nick Plowman spent $250,000 on shares at 30p. Dr. Chris Nutting, 202,000 shares at 24p. Professor Steve Myers, 400,000 shares at 26p. So, you know, these, and then we look at Enrico Vanni and his share purchases over the past few months. So, these directors are not going to throw good money after bad, and they're basically dedicated and focused on what the company is all about. And I just think that there are a lot of panic mongers and doom mongers out there surrounding AVO at the moment, and I think that's unwarranted. You know, take a step back. Regardless of how the money's arrived, the company is now fully funded through to production and sales, and ultimately it's supported by a big board of directors who I have no doubt will continue to support the company by investing in shares going forward. So I think at this level, Advanced Oncotherapy, the risks that surround it have now passed, and it's actually a pretty bright prospect for the future.
Yeah, they've still got quite a few convertible loan notes to go, haven't they, yet, though? So,
well, they have, yeah. But that's the nature of this going forward. And the thing is, you know, I've heard this talked about in some quarters as a death spiral, but this company has some incredibly rare and valuable IP. There is a video on the website. If you go to the Advanced Oncotherapy website, there's a video of this machine in action. And whilst all this has been going on, the company's been going about its business, and the testing on all the components has now more or less been completed, and we're getting very close to getting the machine out there and getting it installed in some of these premises. And I think the focus has been on the state of Advanced Oncotherapy's finances and balance sheet over the past few months, rightly so, which it has now addressed. So I think now the time has come to refocus on what Advanced Oncotherapy is all about, what it's doing, and the potential in the company when it actually puts the machine out and installs the machine and gets it working to treat patients.
Marvellous. Well, it's one to watch because, God, they've look at the chart. It's amazing. It's a scary looking chart, really. But now it's an 18 million market cap, you know. It's
yeah, that's right. And let's not forget, each of these machines sells for $40 million. So it's less than, it's about half the value of one of the machines. And
they've got to sell one first, though.
Well, they have. That's right. But the point is, they have the Harley Street premises. They have a sales team out there globally around the world, getting these machines out there and getting the sales agreements in place. But these things take time. I mean, it's a large purchase for any organization, any hospital. So these things do take time. But I think the time has come. I think we can put concerns about the financing the company behind us now. The company are fully funded, and let's now focus on what the company is actually doing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, I'm just playing a bit of devil's advocate with you, Al. I'm the advocate of the devil. Do your own research, and like I said, you know, any bit of positive news. So what we've had here from AVO is just a stream of negative news and commentators, you know, also adding to that fact. So you'd think, you know, if they get one bit of positive news out here, and if that's a sale of the machine, it could take off the share price. Yeah, but like I said, it's not for the faint-hearted, this company at the moment. You know, it is a risky play. But like I said, with all big risks, they can become big rewards, you know, and that's the thing, isn't it, really?
That's right, and I think as well, you know, just look at the amount of money that the prestigious some very senior people in the medical industry have been investing in this company over the past few months, and snapping up tranches of shares because they're confident in the future of the company. So, you know, I think the funding is now in place and sorted. So let's now get back and focus on what advanced logotherapy is all about.
Marvellous, Al. Have a nice weekend. Vela speak next week.
Thanks, Joss. You too.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. I had the CEO on the podcast yesterday. That's Andrea Catania of Zenith Energy, ZEN. At four, they're always there, Ascent Resources, AST. At three, Lightwave, LWRF. Not seen that there before. And do you know what? I did a little bit of research. They had their results out today, and their half-year results. And they seem quite bullish, so I've added them to my watch list. You never know. It's always good to put a company that seems to be, you know, improving on your watch list, I feel. You know, good for a bit of reading material. So that's Lightwave, LWRF. I don't hold any stock, but I will, you know, I'm going to research them. At two, doing very well, and Nicola covered the chart of them earlier on the earlier podcast, Echo Energy. I've got to stop doing that joke. It's not even a joke, let's be honest. It's a lame excuse for a joke. At one, it's a poor challenge of a joke, or attempt at a joke. At one, I did have a punt on these yesterday, a Challenger Acquisitions, CHAL. You know, I was so bored yesterday looking at the markets, because I was busy, but I always look at the markets, and nothing was really moving in my stocks. And I thought, and I saw the RNS come out, on Vox, of course, straight to the front screen of my phone, had a read of it. This is like a 1.4 million market cap company, tiny, micro cap. You know, it used to be a lot higher than this. And turns out they're going to, Mark Gustafson, the CEO, is going to give a loan to the company via a convertible loan. And I quite like the idea of that. And he was talking about things going forward. And I thought, 1.5 million market cap. They've got cash there now. They can do things. It's going to jump. And it did jump by about 30-odd% at one point. It's come back. It's down a little bit today, but it's still up. It's nice to do that. You know, when you buy a stock and it goes up, well, it's just after you buy it. What a nice that. Okay. Top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours were, at five, Upland Resources, UPL, Wrestle Update. That's the Environment Agency Mining Waste Permit Variation. And by the way, I don't know if you noticed, in the Tory Manifesto, I did tweet it out, Tory Manifesto, page 23, I think. And now, which is very good for oil and gas companies in this country, if the Tories get in, their manifesto is that such that oil and gas drilling, non-fracking, are now going to be made permitted developments. And they're taking out layers of, you know, regulatory problems and issues with local councils, the Tories. So this will be very bullish for small oil and gas companies, I think. At four, Solo Oil and Gas. Solo, notice of GM and investment update. At three, SDX Energy, Q1 2017 financial and operating results. At two, Kodal Minerals, KOD, high-grade lithium results from Noengalana prospect. Sorry, I can't pronounce that. And number one, the most liked RNS on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours was from Edenville Energy, EDL, Rukwa Coal Project update. I know it's well followed, and that got a bit of traction today. So that was the most liked RNS on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.